It's time to lead the people. The show for aspiring leaders at every level. If you want to boost your self-confidence, get noticed, and maximize your impact by leading others, you're in the right place. I'm your host, Matt Pepsel. Ready to lead? Follow me. My very special guest leads business development initiatives across the country for Biltek, a rapidly growing construction company. He works with legal, regional, and national clients across a variety of projects and formats. He both thrives in and contributes to Biltek's entrepreneurial spirit and dedication to doing what's right. He is Phil Westbury. Welcome to the show, Phil.
Welcome, Matt. Thanks for having me.
I really appreciate and I've been looking forward to having the conversation. You contributed a fabulous case study. I want to dig into it a little bit more. Give us a chance to kind of let it breathe. Let's talk about it here on the air. So I'll get us started with this. Biltek has enjoyed steady growth for a number of years now. And just to help our audience, what types of challenges should we be thinking about? What naturally crops up inside any growing organization?
Sure. Scaling is one of the most difficult things that any organization can do, because typically, and especially in construction, typically they're spearheaded by a CEO, a founder that does everything under the sun. You know, they're on the projects, they're selling some projects, they're working with accounting, they're working with anything and everything with legal. So here, as we've scaled, it's really forced not just necessarily compartmentalization of individual talents, like, hey, we've got direct people where you're not wearing six hats a day, but it's forced us to learn how to delegate. So, which is quite frankly, the growth has been there, but delegation is tough, letting go and trusting your soldier next to you to make sure the job's getting done. So us that, you know, and I've been at Biltek for actually 6 years last Friday, you know, and it's changed a ton where, you know, back in the day, I maybe had a full sole focus or multiple focuses. And then now it's teaching others to then pick up the baton and run with it, which is different where, especially as our senior leadership team was very used to being involved in absolutely everything.
I think it's great. Congratulations, your work-iversary, I think they call it. Yeah,
that's right.
Something like that. You bring up such a great point, Phil, which is delegation is something that we sometimes take too lightly. It's a very emotional thing. You know, I became known for a thing. I like to make sure it's got my name on it. You know, all the things that prevent us from delegating effectively.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So it is, it's tough. It's emotional. It's scary. It's, and it's something that we as an executive team have worked on really considerably for the last year or so as we try to pull up our next gen leaders to take the next wave of control.
Well, you got to a size where you can't be everywhere at once. You can't make all the decisions without actually constraining your business growth in that way. Was that a realization that sort of happened all at once or just over time?
Slowly. And what you would see is, you know, the cycles in our business, you know, no project lasts forever, right, in the construction world. So what we would see is certain team members that would get very, very taxed for considerable durations, which leads to burnout, leads to unhappiness, leads to turnover. And that's just not at an executive level. That goes all the way from top to bottom of the organization. So it was something that was very cognizant for us, where anybody that was trying to manage and motivate and nurture too many pieces of the business, it led to, you know, C-minus work, and we're not the type of company. So, and we would see that.
Wow. Now, in your excellent case study, I also saw a lot of themes, I would say, featured when it came to things like trust and communication and collaboration. I wonder if you might say, what's the relationship between those things, especially at the time, as you mentioned, like when you're trying to scale?
Yeah. So I'll step back for a second and just say, obviously, we're general contractors, so we build buildings, right? Which is one of the most nuanced businesses because and every business is difficult, don't get me wrong, but we live in a world where there is many pieces to the real estate cog and innumerable pieces just in general contracting. So in any given day, you've got, you can be speaking to laborers on site, to seasoned superintendents, to Harvard business grads on the finance end. So this degree of collaboration is really something that you have to flex through. So, but if we bring it back to Biltek, you know, we had so many things going on and we have to collaborate before a project actually even gets under construction amongst every single one of our 8 departments. So that collaboration is huge, and not one person can do it all. So if there's a speed bump in the road amongst that, and like I said, our project launches really do touch all 8 of our departments, and I can name them off, but the big ones is operations, sales, estimating, safety, accounting, legal. And at the end of the day, it's these pieces that if we're not collaborating together, something's going to get missed. And it's a high risk business. You know, I think the only business that is statistically more risky is restaurants. More restaurants go out of business than general contracting. But it has forced us to collaborate, and we always have had to, which really just circles us back to the whole PI piece of being cognizant and self-aware, because if each collaborator is not humming in their own department, and there's friction amongst the collaborators, breaks down trust, breaks down communication. But it makes it fun as well, because like I said, it's not like we just get to live in one world every day over day. It is constantly evolving.
Yeah, every business in this complex age that we're in really has to come down to some amount of collaboration. And I think even for a business that isn't growing as rapidly as you have been, it's challenging, you know, to get people to work together, break down those silos. Sometimes it's just complicated. Like, how do we see all the things going on across the business? Then you throw in the scale and they're like, holy cow, right?
Yep. Yeah. And that's been painful, you know, especially, you know, our CEO, in one day, you know, he's involved in top to bottom to the business as we scale, the visibility lessons, whether it's from my team or operations or estimating, where we struggle with visibility and the reason for that is because some battle scars, right? We've bruised our knees and skinned our elbows over the years, where we're always looking for the predator that's laying in the grass. And it's tough, right? And when we lose that visibility, it's not that we don't trust, it's just difficult, right? Because we've used to being to having to shoulder that burden when we were a much smaller company, you know, 6, 8, 10 years ago.
It's almost like the more I know I can see it when I want to, then the less I feel the need to come in and ask about what's going on. So it's almost like if you give me the transparency, I may or may not do anything with it. But if I don't have it, you can bet I'm going to have to come down there and we'll have a conversation.
For sure. For sure.
But now I wanted to bring this up because you brought up the PI bit and some of the self-awareness. In my experience, some managers, for example, are natural people leaders, and most of us, like myself, we need a little bit of help. And so I wonder if you might tell us a little bit about what changed when you started providing managers with behavioral insights about themselves and about their team members.
Yeah. You know, my perspective may be a little bit different, but because I bring some levity into it. You know, it is interesting to think if you're okay with being self-aware and you can kind of make fun of yourself a little bit, but no matter what PI profile you have, you in different situations, you're going to have strengths and weaknesses, right? So acknowledging that, step one. But two, it's kind of funny to acknowledge, like, when there's a pinch point and we're having friction and we're like, my gosh, why aren't we getting along right now? And then you can kind of point to the fact, hey, you're detailed, I'm not. And you acknowledging it goes a really long way. So as leaders, especially in more traditional command and control models, which we've of course have aggressively moved away from, where it's more empowerment and making folks realize that they've got the control to manage their own destiny. It's really helped us. And I'll say this as, you know, on the executive team specifically, it's allowed us to mitigate some risk, or not risk, I'm sorry, stress. Where we're like, oh my gosh, why is this so painful? And then we can point to very simple things that will allow us to at minimum be able to walk into a scenario and help ourselves, because being self-aware, it allows us to solve problems easier. It also, as an executive team, it allows us to not necessarily call out, but make someone aware that, hey, due to your strong personality tendencies, this could be perceived in a different light, or maybe too stressful on you or your subordinate or whatever it may be. So I chuckle about it. Like, and when I go over through it with my team, I point out exactly when we're going to feel stressed, when you're going to absolutely get perturbed by me, and when we're going to feel like we're going off the rails. And I'll tell you, if you can step back, chuckle a little bit, and realize it's not from bad intentions or bad apples or bad actors, it makes it easier to take a deep breath and okay, let's reset for a couple minutes and get back to work. So it's been super helpful, especially for those that are highly trained, you know, like ones that do one job really, really well and don't kind of get out of that realm. So it's like when they're asked to do something else or moved into something else, it's a high level of stress naturally, but it helps to acknowledge those things. So again, I chuckle about it, you know, and I say that to my team, hey, this is when you're going to hate your boss. And, you know, we say it endearingly.
Yeah, you get good at apologizing early and often. When you have the bigger your personality, the better you need to become at that. You hit on some points that are really, really important here too. And something I was really encouraged by is you really talked about the stress that it plays and diffusing a situation by acknowledging that we have different personality types or my style may not always land properly or tell me where, you know, this is starting to get the best of us and I'll try to do my best to rein it in. And I think that historically we saw that high levels of performance and engagement have always been important, but now we're seeing that well-being matters. Yep. And I would imagine in construction, I don't know the space well at all, but if somebody calls out of work because they're just having a tough time, that's devastating to a project when you counted on them to do a specific job and they didn't quit, but they're just, they're calling in sick today and you're like, oh no. So
it's tough. Every day, every minute, every hour matters on those job sites. So it is a big deal. But, you know, it's all really fun because it all weaves together when you really think about it, because not just are we dealing with a shift in mindset away from a command and control style, but also it's a multi-generational workforce that sees the world very, very differently. And that's amplified in construction, where the vast majority of the staff has traditionally been older men, you know, with a skill. So it's been good, you know, but I bring levity to that. Hey, we got to laugh at a little bit how the world looks at this and hey, I'm stressed and the world changes and yeah, you know, the Gen Zers or millennials, Gen Xers, you know, and everything like that. It makes it easier when you have a high degree of acknowledgement and self-awareness, because then you can actually solve the problems.
Yeah. And you're relating in a very different way when we recognize that we have differences. We don't have to pretend like we don't have differences, but I think acknowledging them, honoring them, and even celebrating them can go a long way. Here's one of the things I learned early on when it comes to leadership. The best leaders know how to build trust and motivate their people. And there are two ways you can do this. The first is to spend a whole bunch of time you don't have fumbling around and trying to figure out what makes the people around you tick. I wouldn't recommend that approach. The better technique is to use readily available tools to fast forward the insights you need so you can spend more time leading and less time playing guessing games. One of my favorite people first tools comes from the Predictive Index. The Predictive Index, affectionately known as PI, makes it easy to understand what each individual on your team needs out of a manager so you can personalize your leadership approach to get the best results. I can tell you with 100% certainty that the PI tools work for me and they'll work for you too. I was first introduced to the Predictive Index way back in 2007, and it changed my leadership. 10 years ago, I joined the company, and I've been proud to contribute to the development of talent optimization and the PI tools that make it possible in organizations of all shapes and sizes. Using PI, you can coach, motivate, and develop each of your direct reports on their terms so you can move up in your career with less stress. Visit predictiveindex.com to learn more. To make it even easier for you, I'll put a link in the show notes. And now, let's get back to the show. But the other thing I wanted to pick up on is that you had talked about in construction, risky, second only to restaurants, perhaps, but also that you're moving away from command and control. And I think I talked to so many clients who are like, well, how will we be able to ship this software? How will we be able to build this bridge or do whatever if we're not, you know, having this command and control approach? And the answer is you're going to have to change it if you're going to continue to have access to top talent, if you're going to scale your business, all those things. So how did that play out? Did you deliberately shift away from command and control? Is it something that you decided and then had to work at? Like specifically, how did you think about that hierarchical shift?
Yeah, so we thought about it in a multifaceted approach, but traditionally, if you even go back to the size of BuildTech, what really was the impetus of it was really this delegation factor. Hey, you know, we had an executive team, and at this size, we can do it. We can be involved in everything, but hey, if we want to triple the size of this company, it quickly realized that we not to only one need to make sure that the folks below us in the hierarchy per se, know how to do pieces of our job so we can scale. And two, we're not going to be around forever. Now, I'm the youngest guy on our senior leadership team by a decade, so I'm a little different. But hey, some of the others that are 50, 55, 60, it's like, hey, we're not going to be around forever. So how are we going to pull up these younger generations to fill our seats? You know, hey, how are we planning for the next 30 years, 50 years, whatever it may be? And it all goes together. Hey, by doing that, you retain better top talent. You give them opportunities to grow. They learn. And then before we know it, we're less stressed and working less hard as an executive team because we have talented individuals that are capable and willing and able. And it was a very deliberate shift. And it started with that delegation piece. Hey, we really need to be cognizant of making ourselves uncomfortable with delegation so we can further scale the business and grow it into perpetuity.
It really is an evolved mindset, to think about it that way of saying, we're not going to be in the business forever. You know, we want to make sure that the organization is ready for what comes next, that we're pulling our young people up, as you mentioned. So it really is powerful. But I'll take us to something a little bit more operational, if you will, which is that in the case, we talk about this intentional hiring approach, which was really powerful. But I also was even more impressed when it came to an intentional onboarding approach. And I think that, I talk to a lot of organizations that say we're doing a decent job of attracting top Gen Z talent, as an example, but then we're managing them out of the business. And I think sometimes it comes down to a failure to set the right expectations during onboarding. So I wonder, Phil, if you might tell us just a little bit about your 4-day onboarding program or the 4-day onboarding experience that you've kind of evolved into presently.
Sure. So it really was built on a need to expose folks to different pieces of the business other than the specific role that they're being hired for. And take, for an example, a superintendent who is on site every day on their project. That could be in Chicago or Charlotte or Las Vegas, anywhere, removed from the day-to-day of the office, right? So there could be instances years ago where they may never, ever interact with me or our CEO or our accounting team where, hey, it's like, hey, we got a project going. We need a superintendent. We hire one. We throw them a hard hat in a backpack and say, go get it. So and what we realized is that there are so many folks that were coming to our company, whether it be a superintendent or project engineer or project manager or business development or accounting, that without exposure, they didn't realize really all the opportunities we had within BuildTech. So we're not one that says, hey, you started in accounting or estimating and that's where you're going to be for life. But so many people are not exposed at all. So it was really deliberate in giving these folks a 360 view into the company, the personalities that exist in it, and it allows us to understand who they are, where they came from, and we're a sounding board too. So when that superintendent who I may never have met, years ago now, hey, I met Phil and I tell him, hey, if you see something, say something to me. And he says, hey, there's a building going on across the street and there's some other work. It's a collaboration piece that has been fun, but it's been very deliberate to make sure that they not only understand their role in our culture, but they also understand what the heck everybody else is doing around them, right? Because it's real easy to say, I was estimating or legals or business development's fault. But when you realize really what these folks do day to day, it opens your eyes and it builds a bridge. So good.
It's like a holistic understanding of the business helps you do whatever your localized function is right now that much better.
For sure. For sure.
Well, that takes our onboarded people who are brand new to the business. Let's shift our view to the ones who've been in there the longest, your executive team. And I know executive team dynamics, always exciting, no matter what. And I think you did a fabulous job integrating the tool set, for example, with Diane Stafford, who's your certified partner from UpTalent Solutions. And I wonder if you might just tell me about the dynamic among the executive team, both before and after using the behavioral tools from PI. You go back far enough that you remember a time when you didn't have it. What were things like? And then specifically, how did those behavioral insights help?
Yeah, I'll tell you, I certainly won't paint a picture that it was bad by any means, but we had these flashpoints of stress. Like, and it was our business cycles really quick. Sometimes it can be really slow. And there is so many competing dynamics that affect my world and every other department that I mentioned day to day, you know? So what we saw is these pinch points in areas where individual departments weren't getting support. And specifically, you could break that down into individuals. Hey, me in business development didn't feel supported by operations because, you know, there was a level of friction or misunderstanding or anything like that. So, and in times of extreme stress, it was really hard. Like, this is a tough business. So it helped us really break down and, again, kind of bring some levity to it. It's like, you know, hey, Phil's the Maverick. Of course he's in the sky right now. Like, he's not, you know, at ground level here or 10 feet below the surface in the weeds. So that understanding allowed us to break down some of those barriers, and especially with a strong personality group. You know, we almost all have strong attributes one way or the other. I think our CEO is one of the only ones that's right down the middle. So good for him, I guess. But, you know, it's and if I was to give a specific example, you could look at, you know, just the age-old adage of sales versus operations, right? And that's a tale as old as time, right? So you've got me, the young gun sales guy, who's the maverick, hard charging out front, with, you know, the operators on the other end that are true operator PI profiles. And it's like, duh, we're going to stress each other out. They're like, I don't even know what Phil does half the time. And he is moving a billion miles an hour. Like, I don't know what's going on. So it was high levels of stress, and it allowed me and them to find a way to meet in the middle and develop tools, not just personally, but also company-wide, that said, hey, all right, here's the information that you may need. Here's the tools that I need to stay out front, and allowed us to play to strength. So it's helped us, again, laugh at it a little bit. Yeah.
You really the ideal methodology, I should say, that we really recommend. We call it awareness, insight, action. When you start to raise awareness of saying, hey, I'm a maverick, you're an operator. Oh, that's right. Of course. No wonder things are different. The middle part, when we talk about insight, is how's it showing up in our work? Well, every time that you go off and you do this thing, then here's what I have to do, and here's what I'm thinking. So, and then the last one is the action. Like, what do we want to do differently? And you mentioned that the tools gave you techniques to de-stress, bring some levity, bring some understanding, maybe get out in front of some stuff. So that's a fabulous example.
it was fun. I still laugh at it, you know, because it is. I mean, that's just my personality, but it's super insightful if you're self-aware, and if you can't laugh at yourself a little bit, well. Yeah. Can't take ourselves too serious.
And once you see it, you almost can't unsee it. It's like, now that you're like, well, it makes total sense. Now operators, you know, who start off on the job 20, 30 years later, become executives of operational functions. And
that's right.
Maverick coming in, even if you might be a little younger in the business, it's like, well, I'm going to have a very different sort of tendency and preference. And
for
put those two together, that's what you're going to get.
Yep. For sure.
Well, one of the other things I was really impressed with the case study is that you have this tremendous variety of facts and figures and results, and some were monetary and some weren't. But my question for you is, like, a lot of people listening are going to be like, this is making a lot of sense. We're also have a multi-generational workforce. We also are rapidly growing. We also feel stressed. So they're going to want to try to follow in your footsteps here a little bit. My question for you, Phil, is if I'm an executive, how should I be thinking about an investment in people-related tools? Like, in your experience with PI, should I only look at like direct ROI and the money I'm going to get as a direct result, or is it more about indirect or the way people feel? Like, we've talked, we kind of run the gamut today. What should I be looking at?
Sure. Really all of the above, but I will tell you, if there's one clean metric that, you know, say there's a pure finance guy at the top that only looks at the bottom of spreadsheets, what you would see is if you can reduce your unplanned attrition, you will undoubtedly save money. So hiring costs a ton of time, a ton of energy, a ton of money, right? Hundreds of thousands of dollars in every given year, and especially even if you're utilizing outside recruiters or whatever it may be, it's really, really expensive. So if you're looking at this in a spreadsheet, if you can drop your unplanned attrition, if you can cut that in half, and we operate like our goal is less than 5%, meaning that less than 1 in 20 are leaving BuildTech on their own accord, which, as far as industry-wide, is extremely low. You know, there's probably the industry metric is closer to 15, 20, 25%. That's like a pure ROI piece. then I think if you've got a, you know, an executive team of 6, 5, 10, 12, whatever it is, and if you kind of started polling people throughout the year, it would be the softer side. Hey, does it feel like we're getting along better? And that's, you know, put whatever dollar value you want on it. It's a lot easier to go to work and be productive when you're not stressed through your eyeballs because you're dreading having to battle through a challenge with somebody who doesn't see the world the same as you. So, and I think that's worth a heck of a lot of money. If your folks are showing up engaged, they feel empowered, and you know what, you're not losing folks to unplanned attrition. Yeah, it's a really is a great return.
I love it. And Phil, I'll get you out of here with my easiest question of all. Where can listeners go to learn more about you and about Buildtek?
Sure. So you can go to our website, which is buildtekllc.com. And of course, find me on LinkedIn if you want to reach out. We're more than happy to be a resource. But I've enjoyed PI, enjoyed the conversation, and appreciate the time.
Awesome. And listeners, I'll have those links in the show notes. You're only one click away. If you want to check out Buildtek, connect with Phil, or I'll even include a link to the case study that I've been referencing today. Phil, thanks so much for spending some time with us. Really appreciate it.
Cheers, man.
Here are my Built to Last top 3 takeaways from today's episode. 1, awareness opens doors. Where we lack self-awareness, we invite confusion and frustration. Tools like those from the Predictive Index raise understanding and open dialogue. 2, hit the pause button. When friction arises, call time out. Ask yourself what's really contributing to the escalation. Competing styles and competing goals are often the culprits. 3, look at all sides. An investment in talent optimization produces a hard return in the form of performance and reduced turnover, but don't sleep on the so-called soft benefits of a better working experience for all. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Strong reviews help shows like mine get noticed. And be sure to subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss your next opportunity to learn, lead, and live at your best. Thanks for making this investment your leadership ability, and thanks for sharing this podcast with another aspiring leader who needs to hear it. All right, leaders, until next time, don't just manage the business when you can lead the people.